Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Not so many mini episode 335 of Real Life Ghost Stories. And to kick things off this week, I would like to say thanks to some of our newest Patreon subscribers. I would like to thank Mike Sorella, Emma L. Lay, Mad Madame Mim, Michaela S., Sarah Shepherd, Susie Heyman, Bree Robertson, Chris P., Ashley Crilly, Gillian Nicole, and Carlos Amaral. Thank you so much for subscribing to the Patreon. I love you and appreciate you every single day. And our film review this week, our film review is Late Night with the Devil. Late Night with the Devil was released in 2024. It has 7.5 out of 10 on IMDb and 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. Johnny Carson rival Jack Delroy hosts a syndicated talk show, Night Owls, that has long been a trusted companion to insomniacs around the country. However, ratings for the show have plummeted since the tragic death of Jack's beloved wife. Desperate to turn his fortunes around, on October the 31st, 1977, Jack plans a Halloween special like no other, unaware he is about to unleash evil into the living rooms of America. Look, I'm just going to say it here and now, I loved this film. I loved it. It was a joy to watch. I was thoroughly entertained the whole way through. Let's split it into likes and dislikes. So in terms of likes, I loved the opening sequence. So the opening sequence was like a complete exposition about the character of Jack Delroy, you know, his rise to fame, the illness and death of his wife and what happened next. And there was also a lovely exposition in there about like the satanic panic, what was happening in America at the time, what was going on TV. And there was this tiny reference to Bohemian Grove. And when they referenced Bohemian Grove in this opening sequence, the lovely Sinead from the Poisoner's Cabinet and I turned to each other in the cinema and we were like, oh my God, this is linked to Bohemian Grove. And if you don't know what Bohemian Grove is, Bohemian Grove is an elite gentleman's club where you have to have a lot of money, power and influence to be invited to join this club. It has gained this pretty sinister reputation over the years because of its secrecy and because of alleged sort of cultish rituals that happen within this club. And lots of politicians and celebrities have been involved in this club over the years. So there was this like link to Bohemian Grove. And the minute they mentioned it, I thought, oh, this film is going to go somewhere interesting. And I had considered doing an episode on Bohemian Grove. However, it felt like it was leaning too much into the conspiracy theory narrative. And I don't really feel comfortable exploring that on the podcast. But I did think, oh, what an interesting little note to drop in there. And as the audience, when you get through the expositionary bit all about like the satanic panic and Jack Delroy and his life, you move into the supposed found footage of this particular episode of this late night talk show that aired in 1977. And honestly, I thought it was incredibly clever and very funny. I really think it genuinely captured the essence and the aura of a late night TV show, a late night talk show. It was clever. It felt very watchable. It felt very relatable. It felt real. It felt like you could have watched this TV talk show in the 70s, even right up until the 90s. And the characters within this talk show, so the host Jack Delroy, all of his sidekicks on the show, and the guests and the audience, they're all extremely watchable and extremely interesting. So the first guest that they bring out is a psychic medium, and he does this reading on the audience, and he's doing the classic bits of kind of like, oh, I'm getting somebody with a P in their name, a P, and then he throws it out to the audience, and you can see audience members that are scrabbling because they want to get a message from someone they love, and he's scrabbling trying to get the message accurate, and it's genuinely interesting and funny. And there's also this other guest who is a skeptic, and he is such a dick, but also a very clever dick, in that he is a skeptic who was a magician, and he is actually based on the real life character of James Randi, I think. And he's great. He's a great foil to all of this spooky stuff that's going on. He cuts through it being like, no, well, he's obviously done this, this and this. There's references to like Ed and Lorraine Warren. There's references to the Amityville house. It's just great fun. And within all of the great fun, there are these odd little occurrences that happen that just make you go, oh, that was interesting. And then they bring out the girl who is alleged to be possessed. So you know this is happening from the very beginning of the talk show. They say that one of their guests is a girl who is currently undergoing treatment for demonic possession. And they bring her out, and I'm not joking, she is petrifying. She is terrifying. There's no makeup or CGI on her, but she is honestly one of the most unsettling characters that I have seen in a horror film in a really long time. There are moments where she just looks down the lens of the camera that honestly made me shiver. And I really appreciated how they moved away from kind of shackled to the bed, exorcist style possession of young girl, you know, which we've seen time and time again. Granted, there's bits with scary voices, etc., etc. But I thought she was at her most terrifying when she was just a normal girl. She honestly stole the show for me, and I felt like this is how you make a possession story, and this is how you make it new and interesting. In terms of dislikes, I actually have very few dislikes about this film. I honestly didn't know what to expect when I went into it, and I thoroughly enjoyed genuinely every moment of it. There has been a lot of AI drama around this film, so I'm not up to date on the ins and outs of AI and using AI and not using AI in terms of the creative pursuits. But apparently a number of images, like still images, were made using AI for this particular film. They were like the, I don't know what the technical term is, but it was like a holding card when a TV program in like the 70s would go to an ad break. So it would just be like the title of the TV program and a jaunty picture to go with it. And apparently three of those cards were made by AI in this film, and it's caused a lot of controversy and a lot of drama about taking away work from human artists and creators. And like I said, I'm not up to date on the kind of ethical and real world implications of using AI in film, but I did think it was worth mentioning. I think being nitpicky about this film, it didn't really stick to the parameters that it set up for its own conceit. So the film is billed as like, this is footage from the event. This is the actual filming of the event, and we've uncovered the footage. But yet it almost immediately broke those rules, because it has multiple sequences where we are privy to behind the scenes conversations in the ad breaks of the TV show. And the last like 15 minutes of the film abandoned that entire concept of it being lost footage from that one event, because you end up seeing multiple things from Jack Delroy's perspective, which doesn't fit with what was happening at all. Ultimately, it could have been a device. I mean, I understand that it might have been something where they were like, you know, did it ever happen at all? Or was it all in his imagination? Or, you know, I don't know. Either way, it wasn't clear. And I don't think it was true to itself in terms of what it set up initially. And I don't know that I enjoyed the ending. It was bonkers. The ending was wild, and it did not for one second shy away from that. And that I respect. the actual story of the ending was great and it made sense, and it was this wonderful Faustian plot line where everything linked together. But I do feel like a lot of people will see the film and they will say, oh God, yeah, it was great, I really liked it, except for the last 15 minutes. Overall, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was genuinely scary in parts. I thought the girl who was possessed was frankly terrifying. And for me, it's a 4.5 out of 5 stars. So that's 4.5 for Late Night with the Devil.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Which brings us to our stories this week. Now, I've had a bit of a disaster of a week in terms of time management. I was working on another job, which ended up taking up a huge amount of time and energy that I just hadn't anticipated that it would. So therefore, I couldn't get together a main episode that I was happy with, that was adequately researched and well written. I did have an emergency backup episode and I dug it out, but then the person that it was concerning, I think, has some very problematic views and I didn't feel comfortable platforming them in a jokey manner. So I guess for me this week has been a stark reminder that sometimes I need to remember that I do this as a one-person operation, and that I don't always have the time to do it as a one-person operation, especially if I take on giant other jobs. So as a result, we're going to be doing a kind of slightly extended mini episode today of listener stories. I would also like to point out that I am on a singular laptop. My other laptop broke. Don't even get me started. And this laptop also seems to be on its last legs because I cannot get the fan to stop being so loud. So if you can hear the laptop fan in the background of this recording, I apologise. It's been a rough week, okay? It's been a rough week. So let's dip into the stories. I have, I think, 6 stories for you today, and the last story came from the 6th of January 2024, and story number 1 comes from Anonymous. This is a very sensitive subject, so I want to be respectful as it involves a tragic death of a small child. I won't give any information as to the location due to the nature of this tragic event. I was laying on my bed on a lazy morning, and I felt like a child had run down the hallway and patted the end of the bed. It was like the child had been chased, was having fun and being playful. The thing with this is I have teenage boys that live with me, and they were at the other end of my house. I haven't had a little person in my home for a very long time. I am quite sensitive to spiritual crossovers, but I've never had anything so specific and so defined. I knew this spirit was a little boy. I don't know how, but I could sense it. Now here's where the story gets horrific. My husband is the first responder and got called out to a child struck by a tree. When he arrived on the scene to assess the child, he sadly passed away. My husband still had to check to confirm there was no sign of life, even though it was quite obvious. This was 100 miles away from where I was laying in my bed, at our house, but it was the exact time that I felt this little boy playfully pat my bed. When my husband came home that night and told me about the horrific job that he had to attend that morning, it took my breath away. Not only for the absolute tragedy for the family, but also because I knew that the little boy had crossed over immediately and didn't know that he had passed. He had also passed playfully and happily. It took me a little while to build up the courage to explain what had happened to me during the day. I had asked my husband approximately what time he had attended because I had this experience at the exact time that morning. We confirmed that it definitely was the same time that he was on the scene with this beautiful little child and his family. What an awful, awful tragedy to happen, and what an awful experience for your husband as well. I understand that first responders are trained to deal with these situations, and in essence they do their job, and they have to do their job, but it doesn't stop it being incredibly difficult. And perhaps in that moment, because of your deep connection with your husband, that you ended up somehow connecting with this little boy that had passed on. I genuinely do find people's sensitivity to people that have passed on, when you don't know them, when it's not a family member, when it's just random, I do find it really, really quite unnerving. I do have a podcast episode coming up probably next week about premonitory experiences, and it's pretty mind-blowing. And story number two comes from Joanne. I live on Prince Edward Island on the east coast of Canada. I have a couple of paranormal experiences that I'm finally in the proper headspace to share. In 1994, I decided that I needed to have another go at college. I had dropped out of university a couple of years prior and was working as a nanny. I honestly thought I was stupid because I couldn't focus on the university work. Turns out I had ADHD. I found an apartment in an old house a few blocks from the college in Charlottetown, and my older sister moved in with me. Over our 2 years in that apartment, we had a few weird things happen. My sister was very, very strict with turning off lights when you weren't using them. And frankly, I was a little scared of her, so I never left the lights on. One night in particular, my sister heard my very distinctly squeaky bedroom door open and close. When she got up to use the bathroom, all the lights were on and my door was open. The thing is that I hadn't come home that night. I was staying at my boyfriend's. That was the only time she heard my door open like that, but the lights would frequently be on when we knew we had turned them off. The experience that stands out to me happened one day when I was having an afternoon nap. I was in that not quite awake, not quite asleep state when I heard a baby crying. Then I heard my door open and felt someone sitting on the side of my bed. I thought that our other sister had popped in for a visit with her new baby. I sat up, excited to see my little nephew, but found I was alone and my door was still closed. That feeling of someone sitting on my bed happened a few more times over the years. I was never afraid of this. It felt more like someone comforting me when I wasn't feeling well or feeling sad about something. I honestly feel it was my paternal grandmother. Hearing the baby that first time it happened made me think it was Nana because she had a daughter who died at birth. Since it followed me for several years and several different apartments, I think it was someone attached to me and not the creepy old house. I haven't had that feeling of someone sitting on the bed for a lot of years. Now I occasionally feel a cat walking on my bed when none of our living cats are in the room. I know that it is our first cat, Frank, popping by to say hello. My most terrifying experience happened at the old Prince County Hospital in Summerside. On Easter Sunday 2003, I gave birth to my first child, Peter, approximately 7 weeks before my due date. The labour and birth were extremely traumatic. The cord was around Peter's neck. His little head was bruised and so misshapen from being turned the wrong way and hitting my pelvic bone. I wasn't able to hold him for a couple of hours after he was born. He was hooked up to so many machines and there were concerns about a brain bleed. Also, he had apnea and he would sometimes just stop breathing. This happened once while I was holding him. All of this trauma could have contributed to my experience, but it felt very, very real. A couple of nights after Peter was born, I woke up to the feeling of someone trying to pull me off my bed by my ankles. It was pitch black in the room and I was not able to move. I tried to scream, but I couldn't. Just then, my door opened and whatever had my feet let go. I could see a nurse at the door with a flashlight checking on me. There was some light coming in from the hall. I tried to scream at her not to close the door, but she couldn't see that I was in distress. As the door began to close, I was screaming on the inside to not turn out the light. I was helpless, watching the door close and the light get smaller and smaller. As soon as the door closed completely, I felt someone or something grab me from the side of my bed and tried to pull me off that way. At that point, my paralysis broke and I was able to grab the chain to turn on the light. No one was in the room. I shakily stumbled down to the nurse's station, crying. I told them I was hallucinating and got them to check my blood pressure. I wasn't on any medication at the time. They had given me Demerol one time early in the morning on the 20th, but I'd had nothing since then. This would have happened on the 23rd, so the medication was well out of my system. I slept with the lights on for the rest of my stay in the hospital. The old hospital has since been torn down and the new hospital is in a different part of town. My other two children were born in the new hospital and I had no weird experiences there. I've never experienced anything like this again and I hope I never do. Peter is now almost 21 years old and graduating college this spring. Joanne, I resonate with you here wildly because I would rather take on a ghost, poltergeist, demon, maybe even an alien than the wrath of my older sister. Initially, your experience made me think that it was something residual, something that was attached to the apartment that was just replaying over time. But like you said, you know, if it followed you for several years in several different apartments, maybe it was a family member who was coming, dropping by to let you know that they were there, sitting at the edge of your bed, you know, footsteps at night time. Maybe it was a family member that was looking out for you. Again, would like to add that we need better ways that our deceased loved ones can look out for us. I would argue that every time. And your experience in the hospital sounds incredibly traumatic from all angles, from the reality of your son being born so prematurely and being so ill, and then that feeling of something grabbing you and trying to pull you off the bed. My cynical kind of logical argument to try and make myself feel better if I was in that situation, and maybe it'll make you feel better, who knows, is it extreme sleep paralysis due to the exhaustion of the situation and the trauma that you were in? Was that what happened? I mean, dear God, please let that be what happened. And story number three comes from Susie. This story was told to me by my dad when I was 16 and living with my parents. One morning, my parents were in the kitchen cooking breakfast. Out of the corner of his eye, my dad saw me walk down the hallway in a towel as if I'd just gotten out of the shower and was walking towards the laundry room for clean clothes. He thought nothing of this and continued cooking. But my mom, visibly shaken, said, "Oh my God, I just saw Susie." My dad agreed, saying, "Yeah, she just got out of the shower." But my mom denied this and said I was still in my room asleep. My dad then walked to my room to check on me, and there I was, sound asleep, pajamas on, no towel anywhere in the room, and I clearly had not moved for some time. And as they both just saw me walking away from my room, there was no way for me to have walked back into my room in the time they saw the apparition and found the real me asleep in my bed. About 10 years later, my dad was watering the garden in the front lawn. The house is set up so that there's a large window in the front, and if you look through the window from the front lawn, you would see the entire living room, with the kitchen just out of sight on the left. The front door is on the right side of the window. While watering the garden, my dad looked up and saw my brother inside, crossing the living room from the kitchen and towards the front door. My dad was expecting my brother to open the front door, but he never did. Additionally, my dad thought my brother looked off somehow, like his face wasn't quite accurate. My dad immediately went inside and found my brother still in the kitchen, totally occupied, cooking dinner. To make sure, my dad asked if my brother had walked to the front door just now, and my brother said no, he'd been cooking this whole time. My parents had always believed these apparitions came directly from my brother and I rather than some external entity. Our energies somehow projected images of ourselves that lasted only moments. My brother and I both struggle with anxiety, so my dad firmly believes that this negative energy manifested somehow into these warped copies of ourselves. When my parents saw me at 16, I'm 29 now, I had been struggling with my first bout of serious anxiety and had to start medication for it. With my brother, he had recently graduated from college and was struggling to find work. I never knew what to make of these experiences, but I remember listening to mini episode 266 where you described a theory that certain emotional states could result in weird energy that manifests itself in weird ways. My dad would totally agree with this theory, and I'm growing more convinced of it the more I listen to stories similar to this. I wonder if anyone in the Real Life Ghost Stories community could help me with this next story, as I have no idea what's going on. In my early to mid-20s, I began having these experiences where I would wake up with sleep paralysis, and my entire body would be buzzing and vibrating intensely. It would feel as if my consciousness, my soul, my spirit, or whatever you call it, was trying to rip itself away from my body. I would hang on tightly to my body because I'd be too scared of what would happen if I let go, and eventually I would fall back asleep. After a few times of this happening, I decided to try and let go of my body. For the couple of times that I did this, I felt very wobbly and would clumsily fall out of my body and float around and end up looking down at my apartment from the ceiling. I find this experience very strange, as I had also experienced normal sleep paralysis several times, where I would mostly hallucinate that someone had broken into my apartment or that there were demons in my room. As a side note, what helps me out of these sleep paralysis episodes is taking slow, relaxing, deep breath. It works every time. But in those instances, I have never felt the intense vibration or the feeling that my consciousness was actively separating from my body. I didn't think to share any of this until my brother shared the same experience. The first time my brother had this out-of-body experience was while he was living with our parents a couple of years ago. He woke up one night and sat up from the bed feeling extremely weird, like his whole body was buzzing and the edges of his body were blurry. He looked at the clock and saw it was midnight, and then looked out his door, which was cracked open, and heard and saw our dad walking by, presumably going to bed. My brother then looked behind him and saw himself lying on his side, completely asleep. Freaking out, he laid back down immediately and managed to fully wake up. The next morning, he asked our dad what time he went to bed, and my dad said, "At midnight. Why?" I know that last part could just be a coincidence, but after he shared this experience, we began swapping stories and found that both of us feel the vibrations and the wobbly, blurry feeling whenever we leave our bodies. My brother is better at controlling where he goes and is able to look at himself from above, whereas I have no control over where I float to, and I am too scared to look back at myself. It's just too bizarre. I don't know whether these are just dreams, a specific type of sleep paralysis hallucination, or real astral projection. All I know is I've never heard others outside of my brother and I describe sleep paralysis in this way. It also feels different from normal sleep paralysis hallucinations that I've experienced. So if someone does have an explanation, please let me know. Firstly, stories about doppelgangers in whatever capacity, they always just give me the heebie-jeebies. They always make me feel really weird and uncomfortable. Especially when the doppelgangers are just slightly warped, slightly different to what the person looks like in real life. I also agree with your dad. I think a part of it is to do with energy of that person. I think teenage and young person energy is incredibly strong. And especially as you said, like you were dealing with some serious anxiety at the time. Like when we talk about poltergeist activity, they're often linked to teenagers in a household that are going through puberty or an anxious situation or an anxious time. So I totally agree with your dad on that one. And I think what you're describing, it does to me at least sound like astral planing or astral projection. I don't entirely understand how astral projection works, but there are lots of people who say that they can do it and do it. And I feel like I've definitely read stuff about astral projection before where they say that in the beginning, in the early stages of it, that you feel like your body is vibrating. And the fact that both you and your brother can do it is pretty wild. I'm wondering if there's some sort of test that you could set up that would prove that you were astral projecting. I don't know what that test would be. I'm sure there's plenty of people online who have had that discussion about what you could do to test yourself to see if you were astral planing. I think there was a doctor or a psychiatrist who would place items on high ledges in a room without the knowledge of the subject or the participant. And then if they were able to astral project and tell him what was on top of the wardrobe or on top of the shelf, then they would know that they were astral planing or astral projecting. Do you know what I mean? So I wonder if there's like particular time periods when it happens, or you know before you go to sleep that it's going to happen, if there's somebody in your life that could put something somewhere where you could astral project to and tell them what it was. To be honest, I don't know if I could think of anything worse than seeing myself sleeping. And story number four comes from Cassandra. When I was 8 years old, I went to Australia with my parents to visit family and explore the country. One of our first stops was in Queenstown, Tasmania, where we stayed at an Airbnb. The bed and breakfast was this beautiful old mansion by the name of Penghana. When we arrived, we were greeted by the caretaker and her basset hound. Both were lovely. The lady showed us around the house and then took us to our room. She explained that we could go where we wanted in the house other than her living quarters, as there was no other guest in the house. Before she left, she told us that if the lights switched off when we walked into rooms, just ask politely for them to be turned back on and they should work again. And with that, she was gone. My parents and I were confused, but thought nothing of it and continued on with our afternoon. It wasn't until the next morning at breakfast that I asked her what she meant. She explained to me that over the years she had worked there, many guests told her reports of seeing a woman in a maid's outfit standing at the top of the main staircase, and a little girl who would run from room to room. She had never seen them herself and would never tell guests unless they asked or brought it up. I never got to see them too, but I had some strange experiences in the house. On our third day in the house, I went with the lady up into the attic to look at the maid's quarters. As soon as you got to the landing where the door was, the air was frigid and got colder when you entered the room. Keep in mind that this was Australia in the late summer. The drapes in the attic were lightly fluttering the whole time I was up there. This could very well have been a draft, but the air felt stagnant and cold. If there was a draft, the air would have been warm due to the heat outside. Nothing more happened until the day before I left. I've always woken up early, and that day was no different, so I read in bed while I waited for my parents to get up. About an hour or so later, I put my book down on the bedside table with my favourite bookmark marking my spot. I was out for around 5 hours, and when I came back, my book was sitting on my bed, open to a page much earlier in the book than I was, and my bookmark was on the bedside table. The weirdest experience I had was also that day. I was wandering around the house looking at all the old furniture and paintings. I went into a room that had some plants and floral couches. As I was looking at a painting, the lights went out. At first, I thought the power was out, but when I went to the light switch, it had turned off and there were lights on in the hallway. I turned the light back on and went back into the room. When I got halfway across the room, the light turned off again. Taking the caretaker's advice, I asked for the light to be turned on again, and it did, but only for a second before it started going on and off without anyone being near the switch. I watched the switch flick up and down, and for what felt like hours before I said, "You're scaring me. Please leave me alone and leave the light on." And what do you know? It worked. I fucking booked it out of that room and never went anywhere unless I could see or hear someone for the last of our stay. During COVID, my beloved horse Dunboy passed away. He was a Connemara pony from Ireland. He was the calmest horse you could ever ask for, never spooking at anything. As you can imagine, I found it hard to connect with other horses for a while and my lesson barn after his death, until a rescue came just over a year later. She was an abused and neglected paint quarter horse who needed a lot of training. I was not the most experienced rider at the time, but I bonded with this mare right away. We named her Eden. There were many setbacks in her training, but fast forward to now and she is an amazing horse who I trust with my life. A couple of weeks ago, I was out on a trail ride with her. There had been a bear in our neighbourhood for the past couple of days. I live in BC, Canada, so this is normal. We named the bear Brian. I'm used to seeing him every once in a while, but my horse is not. We ran into him while out on our hack. Both Brian and Eden lost their shit and ran in different directions. Eden took off in a full-on gallop going down a hill on a narrow forest path. I was slipping off the side of her back trying to hold on to her mane for dear life when there was another set of hoofbeats running beside us. I'm not sure if I imagined it in the panic, but something calmed Eden enough that she slowed and I could get back into place. I got her into a canter and slowed her to a walk. She was still freaked and trying to run, but the hoofbeats stayed with us until we got to a road and had both calmed down. It could have very well been in my mind, but I'd like to imagine that it was my old friend looking out for me and keeping me safe like he used to always do. The other day, my dad was out for a walk with our dogs and I was at home doing chores. My phone started ringing and it was my dad, so I picked it up. He told me that he was about 10 minutes away and to get the dog's dinner ready. 15 minutes went by and the dog's dinner was ready and they weren't home yet. I wasn't worried, but then 30 minutes passed and I decided to call my dad and ask him where he was. He had no idea what I was talking about. He had never called me and was still out walking over half an hour from home. When he got home, I showed him my phone records. There was a 48 second call from him before I called him to ask him where he was. His record showed it too. If my dad had pranked me, he would tell me. Anytime he does prank me, he's way too proud of himself to keep quiet about it. I don't know who I talked to on the phone, but it sounded exactly like my dad. Same voice, the same inflections, said the names of my dogs and where he was walking. Honestly, that Airbnb sounds like a Scooby-Doo episode. You rock up and the caretaker is like there with their dog and they're going, yeah, if any spooky stuff happens, you just ask for it to stop and you should be fine. As far as I know, everything should be okay. Although it does sound like you and your parents got off pretty lightly if other people are seeing a maid standing at the top of the stairs and a little girl running here, there and everywhere. Like, I'd be thinking to myself, thank God it was just lights and my book being moved. Although at the time, I can guarantee you I would not be thinking that, because I'd be thinking, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me and I'm so terrified. And I guess one of the stark things about that story is the cold in the maid's quarters, especially in the heat of Australian summer, especially when there are so many people who claim to have seen an apparition of a maid in that particular place. I also feel like it's very disingenuous of the caretaker to be like, I don't talk to people about the haunting unless they ask. But then you actively say, if the lights turn on and off, just ask politely for them to stop and they'll stop doing it. Of course, people are going to ask. So of course you're going to be talking about the hauntings to pretty much every guest. And in regards to your horse story, I think the bond between a horse and its owner is pretty staggering. Like, we've seen that time and time again in various stories. And I also think it's very beautiful that you took on a neglected and abused rescue horse a year later. That is such a selfless thing to do, because all rescue animals, in whatever capacity, have their quirks. I also love the casualness of, yeah, there was a bear in the neighborhood, it's pretty normal. That blows my mind. I know, it's context, it's where you are. You're in Canada, you know, it's not unusual to see a bear in your neighborhood, but in my brain, I'm like, oh my God, that happens for people. And it really does sound like your horse came back to calm Eden in this moment of pure panic and terror where there was a real possibility that you were going to get hurt. And I think it's a very lovely thing to be able to say, okay, my old friend might be gone, but they are definitely looking out for me. And we seem to have a doppelganger theme going on in this episode. And I have to admit, I'm not particularly enamored by it. I'm not enjoying it greatly. And story number 5 comes from Becky. When I was young, my older brother would babysit me when my parents went out for the night. As you know, the trauma an older sibling causes. He told me that under my bed were giant snapping turtles and carp. We lived in Wisconsin in the USA. These turtles and carp would eat me. Thanks, big brother. To this day, I still freak out if my arms or legs go over the edge of my bed. Our bedrooms were on the second story of the house and the stairs were so creaky. It was next to impossible to sneak up or down those stairs. When I was young, I would read into the early hours of the morning. One such night, my brother was watching me. When I say watching, it was more like threats of harm if I got out of bed and bothered him. It was very late, and I looked up from my book, and I saw a grey hand coming out of the dark. It had long fingers, pointed and grey, but the hallway was dark and I saw nothing else. The hand pulled back and it was gone. I laughed and said, ha ha, you're so funny, Pat, so funny. No answer. I waited and said, knock it off, you are not funny. There was no sound, so I got up from my bed, switched on the light, and nothing is there. Later that same night, I was again engrossed in my book. I think it was some teenage romance book. It was the 80s. Suddenly, I heard a low growl, so I called our dog, Cammy. Come here, girl. Again, the growl. My hair stood up on the back of my neck. Again, I said, stop messing on me, I'm going to tell. I was answered by silence. No creaky stairs up or down. This time I was mad. He was scaring me, and I wanted him to leave me alone. I raced down the stairs to try and catch him, only to find him sleeping with the dog on his lap on the couch. And I did what any other rational 11-year-old kid would do. Ran and hid under my covers where the growl and hands had just been. Not the smartest kid. To this day, I get the chills. And that happened 39 years ago. Oh, that story has given me the heebie-jeebies. And I am reading this in the middle of the day. And it is... oh, it's making me feel funny. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I hate to say it, but to me that sounded almost alien grey. Like, you know, grey, long, pointy fingers coming towards you in the dark. But the growl seems less likely. And again, this doesn't sound like sleep paralysis. I mean, this is an 11-year-old who is sitting up reading their book. I'm not entirely sure if it was sleep paralysis, you'd be legging it down the stairs to catch your brother in action. I would love to know if you ever had any other experiences in the house like that, like anything similar, or like feelings of weirdness in the house, or was it just that individual night? That sort of something just dropped on the floor or creaked in my kitchen / office space, and it made me jump. Sorry if you didn't hear that. I promise you it happened, and it just made me jump, which just goes to show how jumpy that story made me. Anyway, I was saying, I wonder if your brother ever experienced anything, or anybody else in your family. Either way, I hate it. Like, I hate it if it's a once off, and I hate it if it's an ongoing thing, and I'm very sorry, Becky, that this happened to you. And our final story of today comes from Tiffany. I am an engineer. Or rather, I will be once I finish my degree this coming April. In most things, I am practical and pragmatic, but at times can be a dreamer. I'm not a stuffy introvert like the engineer stereotype, but I do possess the love for data, logic, and a good problem in need of solving. When I was a child, I had a friend who insisted every house he lived in was haunted. I remember clearly laughing at him for the absurdity of his claim. I'm skeptical that there is a god or afterlife and consider myself an agnostic. The irony is not lost on me that I now claim that most of the houses I have lived in are haunted. I've yet to reconcile the inconsistency of not believing in a higher power but believing in spirits. It all started in high school. My mother did and still does live in a very old, tiny and run-down house. I remember being very upset when we moved in. Despite starting my 7th grade school year living in an RV. That house was small, old and creepy and not well maintained. We had already lived there for several years when the radio incident happened. My sister, her friend and I were in the living room, with a Blink-182 CD playing loudly from my room. My parents were not home. As we were laughing, the radio skipped and there was a very loud thud. We ran back to my room to find that one of the speakers, which was on a shelf from the ceiling, was now on the pillow of my bed on the other side of the room. The cord had been pulled from the back of the radio, and the cord was positioned as if it had been thrown from the foot of my bed. Even weirder, I had my allowance under that speaker, and later found it laying on my pillow. I cannot see how that money would have fallen across my room. My parents insisted it was a cat, but of course I saw no cat run out. For a very short time, things got weirder. About a week later, I was taking a shower when the bathroom light turned off. Mind you, all of the doors in that house did and still do pop very loudly when they open. The door did not open. I froze in fear, and after about half a minute, the light turned back on and I rushed out. A few months later, my birthday passed. I had gotten a bunch of those fancy aluminium balloons in a bunch with a weight. I liked them so much that they sat in the corner of my room for weeks on top of the washing machine. Yes, it was in my room, by the back door, before they fell behind and were forgotten. Until one day I was playing Tomb Raider on my PS1 and my stepdad yelled for me from the living room. The deflated balloons had floated out of my room and into the living room and were moving slowly around the house. I would describe it as if a child was walking with these balloons at waist level, about 2 to 3 feet off the ground. The movement was slow and deliberate from room to room. Occasionally they would go up on top of the back of the couch as if looking out the window before coming back down to resume going from room to room. As I played my game, I saw them come into my room as if sitting on top of my hamper, where they stayed for some time. Freaked out at having them in my room, I kept glancing over while I played my game, somewhat terrified. At one point, I forgot to look for a couple of moments, and when I did, they were right next to my face, as if whatever it was had joined me on my bed. I panicked and hid it away and went outside for a bit. Twice that day, I left for several hours, and both times, the balloons sank to the floor and stopped moving. When I returned home, they resumed their journey throughout the house. The second time this happened, I finally popped them, despite protests from my stepdad that it was bad luck. About a year after I had my first daughter, my ex-husband and I briefly rented a house with a few roommates. At least once a week, I would awake to the sound of the hall closet doors and drawers, which were right outside my room, banging opened and closed. Everyone heard it at some point, even during the day. The baby's pacifier would turn up missing, only to appear in the middle of the floor in a room full of people. And once I woke to a loud thump in my room, followed by footsteps running across the room to the crib. At that exact moment, the baby woke up crying. We moved out soon after. Things were quiet for years until we moved into the apartment. Instantly, things started to happen. It always sounded like someone was walking around upstairs. Again, everyone heard it, even in the day. I would hear dresser drawers opening and closing as if someone was rummaging, but only in the kids' room. When my ex-husband moved out, the noise increased, but it was only ever noise, albeit a lot. My first night alone, it sounded like someone threw a box of glass downstairs. I felt my cat jerk awake at my feet exactly as I did, so I knew he heard it too. It would often sound as if furniture was being toppled in the kids' room while they slept, very loudly at that, but nothing was out of place. My sister and I would hear toys in the bathtub, but there were no toys and everyone was asleep. This continued for over 4 years. I would come home after a long evening out as a newly single woman, I went out often, to find the kitchen light on. All the lights had motion sensors which turned them on automatically, and I know I had turned off all the lights. While napping with my daughter, the closet door would open by itself and the cat would walk in, and then walk out. The kids later told me there was a shadow man in there, and that the lights turned on and off by themselves. This explains why my youngest and my nephew would never go upstairs alone in the entire 4.5 years that we lived there. They were both terrified to go upstairs alone, so someone always had to take them to use the bathroom. The kicker, however, was an incident that involved no noise. In 2016, my dad went to jail for about 5 years. A couple of days before the incident, I dreamt of my great-grandmother, who died when I was 5, and was asking her about my grandma, who died when my dad was a child. The dream was so strong I felt compelled to go meet him for lunch and ask about my grandmother who I had never met. I am thankful for that dream. A couple of months later I found myself managing my dad's legal affairs. One night after a particularly stressful day, the kids went to their dad's for the night. I was sleeping very soundly when I jerked awake. There was no noise, and as always the cat was there. I was choking on the smell of a woman's perfume. My throat burned with it. It was so strong, as if someone had doused me in my sleep. I, of course, checked to see if anything was spilled by the cat, and nothing was out of place. When the perfume smell started to fade, there was the lingering smell of flowers underneath. The next day I called my aunt to ask what perfume my grandma wore and went to buy a bottle of Chanel No. 5. We moved to a small house that I bought and for 2 years almost nothing happened. Once or twice I heard a drawer open in the kids' room while I was up late studying, but beyond that it was quiet. Which brings me to the present day and the house we live in now. This house was owned by a midwife and operated as a birthing centre for many years before being sold to an investor who rents it to us. There are giant birthing bathtubs, but it is a lovely house. The first night here, my middle daughter swore she saw the living room light turn on by itself and then quickly turn off when I looked up to look. The very first time I was home alone, I spent the day unpacking while everyone was at school. When my husband came home, he asked who had come to visit. He insisted he saw a woman in a white dress on the Ring camera. He said she rang the doorbell, entered, and then never left, so he thought it was weird. No one came over, no one rang the doorbell, I was completely alone all day. That alone is weird, but it gets weirder. A couple of months later, we went to a party with a co-worker who happens to live 4 houses away. She started to tell us about the ghost in her house. Curious, I asked what the ghost looked like, and she informed me that it was a woman in a white dress. I froze. She further explained that the woman has no head. A glaring difference, but still, I can't help but wonder if they are the same. This house has mostly been quiet, despite seeing a lot of life and potentially a fair amount of death. I never could bring myself to research it. Once again, it seems that I experience things the most. One night, I was up late studying, when I very clearly heard someone whisper loudly in my ear, "Hey!" I immediately went to bed. Sometimes I hear inexplicable knocking during the day when no one else is home. And this brings me to the night time, and specifically last night. My husband, who somehow had only one paranormal experience before meeting me, woke up to what sounded like someone hitting the wall above our bed very loudly. A couple of nights later, I felt a hand imprint on the pillow next to my face while I slept. In the last few months, bedroom noises have increased in frequency. We both heard a dresser drawer open, both very clearly awake. I started hearing what sounded like someone going through the things on my desk while I sleep. My desk is inches from my head. This happened again last night at around 2:45 a.m. The noise of desk shuffling awoke me, continuing after I jerked into consciousness, and I immediately nudged my sleeping husband awake. After several taps, he started to roll over and wake up, at which point we both heard the dog growl. He did not hear the rustling as it stopped when the dog growled. I don't know who is going through my stuff while I sleep. I don't know why there is a reoccurring theme of opening drawers and noises everywhere I go. I read somewhere that people are haunted, not places, and it almost seems to be true. I would chalk it up to the rational explanation of hallucinations, except that there was someone or something else that heard it. For many of these cases, I was awake and quite alert. I also can't help but notice that I seem to be the target more than others. I have no satisfactory explanation that my rational brain accepts. I am sorry if this is lengthy, and if you read this long, thank you for that. I would like your thoughts, or really anyone else's who might have some idea of what is happening. I can't promise you that I will have any idea of what is happening, Tiffany, but I will always have opinions on things. I do think it's very weird. I agree with you, your first story about the Blink 182 CD playing in your room, and then there was a thump and the speaker and your allowance had been moved across the room. Like, I don't see how the cat would have done it. Maybe whatever it was, maybe the spirit, the entity, whatever it was, just was not a fan of Blink 182. And to be really frank, I'm just baffled that you didn't pop those balloons sooner. Because the minute they started floating around the place when they were deflated, I would be popping those balloons in the bin. See you later. Disrespectful or not, don't care. And it is interesting that you seem to be at the epicenter of this, in terms of you are the one that is experiencing the majority of these noises, drawers opening and closing, lights switching on and off. So maybe it is connected to you. Maybe it's, you know, a lost loved one that is trying to get your attention. Again, we need to work on how we go about doing that in the afterlife. Or I wonder if it is just about you having a certain energy that draws things to you, that means that you give off enough energy to allow entities to, you know, open drawers, close drawers, rustle around the place, turn lights on and off. Maybe that's what it's about. And like you said, it's interesting that these things are happening with other witnesses. Like, your kids have noticed it, your partners have noticed it, your animals have noticed it. You know, it's not just you in the middle of the night and you can say, oh, it's exploding head syndrome or sleep paralysis. Like, these things are happening when you are awake and other people are experiencing them too. So maybe it's just you. Maybe you're like a conduit for the dead. And if that's not a title to terrify you, then I don't know what is. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Thank you to Anonymous, Joanne, Susie, Cassandra, Becky and Tiffany for sending in your stories. Remember, the last story came from the 6th of January 2024. Normal service will resume next week when I have not bitten off way more than I can chew. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to send in your story, you can do so by emailing it to reallifeghoststoriespodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out the website, reallifeghoststoriespodcast.com. And if you are desperate for some extra content, you can subscribe to the Patreon. That is patreon.com/reallifeghoststories, where for $5 a month or $2 a month, you get access to heaps of extra content, as well as every single main and mini episode completely ad-free. And on that note, I shall see you next time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.